Chapter 5. Wake up. Someone ordered, smacking Peter lightly on the arm. For one, bewildered, sleep-drunk second, Peter was sure they were under attack. Since he hadn't stayed alive this long in the dumpster fire that was his life by stopping to think things through when he was hit, he reacted on autopilot. The passenger seat was covered in webbing, the opposite door was off its anchors, and Peter was halfway up a tree before he even paused to wonder where the threat was and why nothing was chasing him. His heart stopped. Oh. He slowly turned to look back at the Toyota, regret and horror twisting in his stomach. Sergeant Barnes was still bent over by the car, gripped by tightly checked murderous fury and the liberal quantities of synthetic spider silk that silly stringed him to the car. After a good 15 seconds, he slowly unbent. A couple strands stretched and broke. Peter said. Barnes's arm splayed against the roof where Peter had stuck it. A backpack hung glued to his other hand. Peter said again, looking down at the car door he'd apparently brought with him for cover. Barnes took a deep, slow breath.
You are going to unstick me, he said slowly, clearly holding on to his patience by a very, very thin thread. You are going to get your bug spit off of me. You are going to glue my car door back on, and then you are going to stay in the car and guard Steve while I go drop these things in the pond.
Wait in the car? He wouldn't even get to see the magic spring. The webbing should come off on its own in an hour, Peter offered, waving the car door vaguely at the mess. You can just wait an hour? It takes about an hour. I can go to the spring instead.
You are going to unstick me, Barnes repeated. You are going to...
Right, yes, on it. Peter scrambled down the tree at full speed, tripped, and somersaulted twice over the car door and came up still running. Barnes watched him with the flat stare Peter hadn't seen since the time Barnes had been winter soldiered by that one villain and ended up on the news.
I have the stuff that takes it off. No problem. I've got... Hold on.
Peter frantically dug through the bags he'd webbed into the car, and handfuls of cushion foam blossomed up out of the upholstery when he tugged them too hard. Barnes growled in the back of his throat, but Peter wasn't finding the remover. Why had anybody thought making a duffel with so many pockets was a good idea? It was a terrible idea. What if somebody was in a rush and had to find something, and it had to happen right now, but it was nowhere? And what if they had a furious super soldier standing right behind them growling, and, oh God, the remover wasn't even there? Shit. Shit. Upside, Barnes probably couldn't actually kill him while he was stuck to the car. Peter was 98% sure not even the winter soldier could throw any knives, with both arms glued down. 85% sure, maybe? 73. Peter swallowed and met Sergeant Barnes's eyes. I think I left the can of remover in my desk. There was a crunching noise from where Barnes's arm was still stuck to the roof. As it turned out, being grounded inside a wrecked Toyota was a lot more boring than being grounded in his bedroom. On top of a deeply disappointing lack of computer gadgetry or model construction sets, Peter thought it said something about this entire trip that Captain America wasn't even conscious, and he still got the front seat. Peter tried to get comfortable in the mostly demolished back bench. It was covered in spider silk and lumpy all over from shredded stuffing. He was a growing boy. He needed his space. Captain America wasn't even awake. Everything was terrible forever. Peter sighed and picked at the decomposing webbing on the window. He couldn't even see out, and Barnes had been gone for a literal geologic age. How was he expected to wait this long? He'd driven all the way across Canada with a married 1940s odd couple comedy team to see a magic spring, and he had to stay in the car and... Peter sat up. Sergeant Barnes had been gone for an awfully long time.
hadn't he? Not just, like, boringly long, but actual realistic time long. How much time did it take to chuck a backpack in a fountain? Really? Could something have happened? Peter checked his phone for the time, which did him no good since he hadn't looked when Barnes had left. Who knew how much time had passed? But the webbing was peeling up off the window with ease, which meant it had definitely been around an hour since he'd shaken Peter awake. Barnes had explained exactly what he was going to do, just in case, using insultingly small words and even a simplified map, and it wouldn't have been that long of a trek. So, Barnes probably wasn't dead in the Canadian wilderness. The winter soldier seemed like the kind of guy who could handle a hike in the woods. Probably. Peter looked at Captain America, or rather, Sergeant Barnes, or, well, crap, what did he call the body when no one was home? He really hoped Captain Rogers hadn't accidentally swapped bodies with the frog. That would just be really terrible all around. Peter wasn't going to move, anyway. He had promised to stay in the car. Definitely. He was definitely, completely, 100% going to stay in the car. His gaze slid to the trailhead, then snapped back to the interior of the Toyota. 85% staying. 73%. You are extremely lucky, Sergeant Barnes muttered before Peter had even made his way fully into the clearing. Peter couldn't see him yet. The trees were too dense, and the trail twisted and curved, so it was hard to see what was ahead. He only caught Barnes talking because, well, superheroes.
So lucky that I can hear you brought Steve along.
Peter blinked. He glanced at Sergeant Barnes's comatose body, slung haphazardly over his shoulder like a sack of brunette potatoes, barely breathing because of magical enhanced hibernation. Hopefully.
How? Your stride is different when you're carrying 300 pounds.
Barnes, it turned out, was sitting at the edge of a spring in a small clearing when Peter came around the last tree, a soup strainer in one hand and a carved wooden box in the other. There was a pile of soggy World War II memorabilia on the moss next to him, shooting off little purple sparks as it dried in the sun. Hopefully, Barnes couldn't also tell that Peter had accidentally dragged Rogers's / Barnes / possibly the frog's shaggy head through several thickets and had left a trail of pulled hair all along the way. That would be a conversation. Peter said, you've been here a while? I got worried. Barnes ignored him.
Are you going to throw that box in too?
Peter guessed, shuffling close. He wasn't quite sure if he should sit down next to Barnes, or what. Did Barnes want company? What did he do with Barnes's body that might have Steve Rogers in it? What was the best way to handle your super chaperone's body, while said super chaperone was getting Batman-style moody in the backwoods of Canada? Barnes tapped the box against his knee, looking thoughtful, but didn't say anything.
Totally Batman, ugh. I could throw the box in for you,
Peter tried, shifting. Whoever the body was right then, they were sliding down his shoulder and were headed for more dirt soon. Peter could have webbed them into a sort of leg backpack, but he figured if he did, Barnes might glue Peter's hair to the seatbelt the entire ride home. He hopped a little to get the body rebalanced. It slid sideways again. Barnes finally huffed out a laugh, but it was the scary kind. Peter swayed backward a little.
You touch this box?
Barnes said, pocketing it and standing up.
And I'm not sure what'll happen. I haven't been that angry in a while.
Peter made a, yeah, okay, fine face.
It's just, I'm looking at your dump pile there, and it's pretty big, but none of it worked. You seem to think the box might work, so...
He hopped a little again.
And your body is getting really, really heavy?
Sergeant Barnes turned. Peter cringed a little. But all Barnes did was reach out and take his own body back. Peter thought he would have been more careful, but Barnes just hoisted it right over his shoulder, exactly like Peter had.
Give me the keys back, kid, Barnes said. You haven't broken those, have you, along with the rest of the car?
Peter's hand went to his front pocket.
No, they're right.
The entire pocket inverted as his hand withdrew, dumping its contents into the water. They both looked down at the spring. The keys sparkled.
Do I? Peter hesitated. It seemed really dangerous to just reach into an enchanted spring, but on the other hand, it seemed equally dangerous to push Sergeant Barnes when he was in this mood. Barnes flexed his hands, but passed him the soup strainer.
Peter brightened and carefully scooped the keys out onto the moss. They glittered a little in the sunlight, and dried way quicker than they should have. That was probably okay. Peter was hoping it was okay. At least it meant they could get moving. Barnes didn't seem to be going anywhere, though, so after some awkward shuffling back towards the car, then back towards Barnes, then that little rock to and fro that Peter sometimes made to really hint that maybe May could get going soon, Peter gave up and sat down on the moss. The trees and shrubby things were nice, he guessed, and the spring was pretty. Still, he didn't really see any reasons to hang out, especially with a comatose super soldier still just hanging off Barnes' shoulder like a bag he'd picked up from the dry cleaners.
So, okay. Cool.
Peter was trying to decide if he could make a paper airplane out of damp, drive-through napkins, and, if he could, whether he could make it fly, when his spider sense started screaming at him and Sergeant Barnes's head snapped up. Peter immediately scuttled right up the nearest tree, but Barnes crouched and reached smoothly behind him, sliding two super-complicated-looking handguns. Was it a handgun if it had that many weird rectangles sticking off it? Out from under his jacket. It was a pretty neat trick, since he still had Captain Rogers slash himself slung over one shoulder.
Put on your mask, kid. We're about to have company.
Who? Peter hissed, rummaging frantically in his backpack. Pockets were the actual worst, and only finding the ski mask, he yanked it on anyway.
Who are we expecting?
Aliens, Barnes said,
and then something shiny and pink split the air in front of them, like that shit actually happened in real life, and a huge hulking thing with too many legs and a lot of teeth dropped out of a hole in reality. Holy shit. The thing fell and writhed, like a fuzzy fuchsia millipede with body armor, and the sight of it nearly made Peter's skin crawl off on its own. Fucking space.
When did we get aliens again?
Peter yelped, watching the thing try to get its many legs sorted out and almost manage it before another one landed on top of it and effectively started the whole process over again, but this time with double the legs. Barnes swiveled his head to glare at Peter, like he was the most appalling thing in the clearing, which was pretty rich. There were now three horse-sized, multi-legged arthropods tangling up with each other as more dropped out of a hole in the air on top. Each held a weird rifle that, wow, looked like it was designed by Hello Kitty for Lisa Frank in 1988 and made out of glitter Play-Doh, but with more sparkles. And Peter was the weird one?
We told you about the aliens,
Barnes said, incredulous, gesturing at the swarming pile of alien centipede crabs all trying to reorganize.
We told you about the aliens every day.
In between arguing about which direction to unroll toilet paper?
Peter felt like he had every right to be as self-righteous as he wanted to on that one.
I tuned you out way before you got to aliens.
Barnes looked at him like maybe he was rethinking his entire life, which maybe he should start on the whole assassin thing if he was going to take that course. But behind him, the aliens finally righted themselves. They were looking a lot less ridiculous now that they weren't falling out of space rifts. Peter supposed he might stumble a little falling into a new reality, too. He and Barnes probably shouldn't have wasted all that confusion talking about toilet paper. Oh, God, he'd been complaining about the toilet paper, too. He was just like them. The aliens were now organized and lethal-looking and had all leveled their weapons at Peter and Barnes. Crap, definitely not as whimsical and ridiculous as they first looked.
I'm gonna take a wild stab in the dark, Barnes said slowly, and guess that any guns near the spring that are pink and shiny might not be something we want to fuck around with.
I mean, I watch a lot of sci-fi,
Peter agreed. That sounds about right.
The rip in space spat out another alien, and there was another moment of leggy confusion.
Take Steve and get to the car,
Sergeant Barnes ordered, and Peter turned around and got 300 pounds of metal-boned, airborne, unconscious super soldier right in the stomach. He made a wheezing noise as he scrambled to juggle a body filled with extra metal, jerk it upright, and get out of the way of the rapidly reorganizing aliens. He hopped awkwardly backwards, trying to get a view of the chaos without actually dying. Barnes was fast, almost as fast as Peter, and he was already making the aliens' day as terrible as he could. He was firing a gun rapidly in every direction with one hand, and ripping slices across every alien surface he could find with the other. But Peter could tell he was in trouble. There were too many aliens, with too many legs, and they were quick, too. And those weird guns. Barnes was only dodging in time because everyone was so packed together, and they were probably trying not to shoot each other by accident. But he was going to get Captain America's ass cooked any second. Then one horrible, bendy, bloodshot eye stalk swiveled in Peter's direction. The fact that it was sparkly and pink did not help matters. Peter yelped and scrambled to heft, probably Captain America, into a wobbly bridle carry, dodging a blast that sizzled as it shot past him and left the smell of strawberry birthday cake in the air. Then there were more blasts, and they were fast with those things. He twisted, dove, and, oh, shit, clocked Rogers' head right into a tree as he swung round behind it. Oops. Well, Sergeant Barnes already had brain damage. No one would probably notice.
Kid, look out!
Barnes yelled at him, and Peter ducked just in time to miss getting hit with a shot of lime green light. Glitter splashed all over the tree he dodged behind, and it shimmered hazily, then exploded into a shower of magenta and scorched icing. Peter, staring, nearly bit it right then. He dropped to the ground to avoid another glitter bomb, then popped back up and dodged right for the canopy above them.
I knew you lied to Aunt May about how dangerous this mission was,
Peter shouted, swinging wildly to get out of range. There were six of the things altogether, and Peter felt very strongly that Spider-Man and the Winter Soldier should have been able to take on half a dozen aliens with pink guns that spewed candy and sparkles. He wished someone would tell the aliens that.
Hold on!
He shouted at Barnes, who was trying to cling to the back of one and saw its head off, without being turned into a shower of glitter and viscera.
Take Cap! Let me try something!
What? No, I'm busy!
Barnes's complaint was cut off as Peter hurled Captain America right back at him, and he got pegged in the face with his own metal arm. He had to scramble to catch Rogers, jump off the alien's back, and dodge the incoming fire.
Damn it, kid!
No, I have an idea! We have two options,
Peter yelled, shooting webs everywhere.
We could take them if they weren't aliens.
Sure, too bad they're aliens,
Barnes hollered. Rogers slung over one arm like an old coat, wildly shooting bullets everywhere as he dodged glitter explosions left and right.
But our other good option is aliens with no guns,
Peter shouted, and with a solid yank, the whole extraterrestrial troop lost their weapons. Six alien faces tilted up to watch each pink firearm get retched into the air above them, suspended from spider silk. Then, six alien bodies hit the ground, ducked or cowered behind a tree. Peter frowned. Huh, he said, scratching his head. I mean, I guess there might be a step two in there. Did we win already?
Get down,
Bucky bellowed, leaping across the clearing to tackle him, nearly crushing Peter under 600-plus combined pounds of 1940s human engineering, propelling them all behind a sturdy oak, just as the guns let out a neon magenta laser show of death. Trees exploded on all sides, rainbows sprayed in all directions, and the guns fell back to the ground, the hairy mass of aliens already up and reorganizing. Sergeant Barnes's eyes darted across the glade-turned battlefield for a moment, clearly employing cunning spy skills. He tapped his fingers against the tree trunk for a second as the aliens began to disentangle, then nodded, coming to a decision.
Run.
What?
Barnes hefted Peter up by the collar of his jacket and literally threw him through the air like a human caber toss. Peter recovered quickly, swinging through the air,
following Barnes's jagged zigzag of a run to avoid as much pink fire as possible. They weren't going to lose their pursuers, but they were making some headway. Apparently it was hard to get that many legs through the underbrush all at once.
"But I can help,"
Peter protested, dodging tree branches and getting the occasional mouthful of leaves.
"We can do this!"
"Get in the fucking car, Parker, I swear to God!"
It was looking like Peter's aerial route was definitely faster and would be getting him to the car first, so the next thing Barnes pelted at him were the car keys.
"Open it up, kid,"
he huffed, sounding a little winded. He was a super soldier, but he was also stuck carrying another super soldier at a full Usain Bolt sprint. Steve Rogers was flung over his shoulder again, face smacking Barnes in the ass with every stride.
"Just open everything, I'm going to throw Steve in and gun it."
Peter started jabbing the key fob frantically as the car came into view. Nothing happened.
"The car, kid!"
Barnes hollered, running backwards to rain bullets on the aliens.
"Open the fucking car!"
"I can't, it's not working!"
Peter wailed, landing next to the car, and trying his best not to shatter the stupid clicky dongle in his panic.
"It's not working!"
"So just rip off another door!"
It was too late. The aliens had burst through the trees, slowing now that they had the two of them cornered, and looking as smugly gleeful as intergalactic invertebrates really could. Peter clenched his fist, ready to run back at them. The key fob made a boop-boop sound in his hand. There was a collective pause. The aliens looked confused. They glanced at each other, eye stalks turning slowly and sometimes independently, and then, suddenly, miraculously, every pink death ray in their claws twinkled little lights twice and made a sad powering down noise. They looked at the guns. Peter frowned. He clicked the fob a few times at the Toyota, shaking it and slapping it against his palm. Nothing happened. He frowned again, considered, and clicked it back at the horrified, frozen aliens. "Bwah!" went the laser cannons. The aliens perked up. "Boop, boop!" went the clicker as Peter pressed it again. Went the guns. One of the aliens hesitantly lifted his weapon and pulled the trigger at him. It didn't even shimmer.
"Huh," said Barnes.
Then he grinned. The aliens managed to twist their eye stalks in a way that said they knew exactly what was about to happen next, but they were prepared to go out fighting anyway. Well, this was probably good, Peter thought, as Barnes hooted and leapt a full vertical 6 feet to dive into the fray. Barnes had a lot of anger to work off. Peter left him to it and tried to drag, probably Steve, back into the car without causing any more brain damage on the way. Chapter 6.
Got any twos?
Barnes had shortened the ridiculously overlong strap on the alien rifle he'd looted off one of the corpses littering the grotto. He let it hang and pulled two cards from his hand to pass over to Peter. Behind them, the rift in space was still open, its pink, shimmering edges rippling gently. Mutilated carapaces lay scattered among huge gouges in the earth and dead, smoking remains of trees.
"Give me your kings,"
Barnes ordered, holding a hand out. When Peter didn't immediately move, Barnes snapped at him impatiently and made a get-on-with-it gesture. Peter tried to look offended. "How do you even know I have kings?" he demanded, passing over three cards. Barnes pulled the fourth from his hand and set them in a neat pile next to him. His pile was much larger than Peter's.
"Kid," Barnes said, studying his hand, "if I can find out when a wizard in training wheels is selling enchanted water to undiscovered invading alien civilizations on Reddit, and then actually thwart everyone's plans, I can find out you have kings with only half the deck left in play."
An alien dropped out of the rift, landing heavily before brandishing something at them and shouting, its furious announcement punctuated by a heavy sprinkling of clicks and shrieks. Barnes glanced over at it long enough to be sure it was an active threat, then looked back at his cards and shot it with his stolen rifle. It exploded in a shower of fuchsia glitter.
"They aren't coming through as often anymore,"
Peter said, frowning at his own cards. Maybe he could use his spider sense. Could spider sense help him pick hearts? He held a hand over the deck and tried to feel if there were any queens. No more of the pink guns, either.
The guns are definitely powered with the spring water, Barnes explained. They used them all up, and they're running out of bozos to jump through to get more when no one comes back. Make your move, kid. Quit trying to distract me.
I'm not trying to distract you, Peter swore, pulling his hand back. Do you have any threes?
No. Pull a card and give me your queens.
Peter pulled a queen from the pile, swore, and handed all three over. Barnes put them in his stack. Peter glanced over at Captain Rogers. He was lying carefully tucked into a couple of blankets Barnes had pulled out of the trunk, propped up against a tree. "Is Dr. Strange going to get here soon?" he asked, shuffling through his cards. "I mean, not that I don't love losing to you at card games, but after a while it starts getting old."
"You can lose at something else,"
Barnes offered.
"Hey, wait," Peter said, not really paying attention. "You never threw the box in."
Barnes's face shut down, and Peter frantically backpedaled.
"I mean, of course you didn't. You've got something way better, obviously. Obviously, who would throw in a beat-up old wooden box?"
Barnes gave him a level stare, then pulled a card from the deck and handed it to Peter.
"Give me your threes."
"This is a three," Peter protested, indignant. "You didn't even give me a chance to ask for anything. This isn't how the game works. Come on."
"You were going to ask for a two,"
Barnes said, deftly plucking all the threes from Peter's hand like paper daisies.
"I was not," Peter lied, and then, "Wait, wait."
"We can wait all day. I'll still smoke you at cards,"
Barnes assured him.
"The car?"
Peter shouted, jumping to his feet. He dug in his pockets, pulling out the Toyota's key fob. It was a little worse for wear.
"The car! The car you bought with Captain Rogers that your dad wanted you to have with your future wife?"
Barnes gave him the, "Small child, what are you on about now?" look. Peter was about to defend himself, because it was a really just amazing idea. But another brainwave struck him mid-shout, and he snapped his mouth shut. The ride home was going to be interminable no matter what. But the wait for Strange to get there and close up the space rift didn't have to be filled with old men bickering about clouds if one of them stayed asleep.
"Never mind," Peter said, sitting back down.
Bucky Barnes would freely admit he was a lot of things, but he wasn't an idiot. He knew what a teenager looked like when they just realized whatever their bright idea had been, it was going to turn around and bite them in the ass. Bucky had worn that look himself for most of the 30s, and the few times he hadn't, Steve had. Bucky looked at Peter. He looked at the car keys.
"No, wait," Peter said, but Bucky darted forward and snatched the keys out of his grasping little teenage paws before he had a chance to stutter out a response.
Bucky clicked them once at the space rift, because he was responsible, but when it didn't immediately work, he abandoned it without a second thought and turned the clicker immediately on Steve. Pink sparks twinkled, a children's chorus started up out of the trees somewhere, and Steve made that stupid, amazing, beautiful snort sound he did when Bucky woke him up and blearily fumbled his blankets off. Still in Bucky's body.
"Buck?"
Steve murmured, but Bucky was gritting his teeth and clicking the damn thing at himself. "Nothing." Steve frowned.
"Bucky, where do you..."
Bucky clicked it at Steve again, and the pink lights and heavenly choir winked out, as Steve passed out cold.
"No!"
Bucky shouted, frantically jamming down the unlock button in Steve's direction. Pink lights, creepy children singing, soft beams of sunlight from above all flickered back on. Steve blinked his eyes open again and groaned, hand going to the back of his head where he'd hit it on a tree root.
"God damn it!"
Bucky shouted, clicking desperately, and Steve dropped like a stone again, perked up, dropped, jerked awake, all while the light strobed on and off, and the possessed children's voices jittered and caught like a stuck record. Peter said behind him, and Bucky clicked Steve back on again, and then crushed the damn key fob in his stupid, oversized Captain America's hands that didn't fucking belong to him.
"Bucky, what?"
Steve grimaced, rubbing at his chest.
"Jesus, what happened to my ribs?"
"Alien fight," Peter piped up, poking his head over Bucky's shoulder. Bucky manfully resisted slinging him into the pond, too.
But if you have a headache, that's definitely Sergeant Barnes's fault. I didn't hit you on any trees.
Steve peered at Peter, brows drawn. Bucky made a wordless, grunting scream of fury and whipped the mangled electronics into the enchanted pond, where they skipped 5 times across the water, purple sparks skittering, before sinking beneath the surface with the sound of triumphant violins. Steve blinked at him, stopping mid-rise, then furrowed his brows in a concerned frown. Bucky took a deep breath and managed a smile.
Fine, he swore,
relaxing his clenched fists through sheer force of will.
Fine, just stressed.
Steve looked at the pond, pink ripples wafting out gently from the submerged key fob. The breeze carried the occasional sad tuba sound effect.
I think he's worried about the box, Peter whispered to Steve from behind Bucky, where Bucky could clearly hear him.
Then he sidled like a mongoose over nearer to Steve, while Bucky practiced nonviolence very hard.
What box?
Bucky tried, making frantic, very clear, cut-it-out gestures as soon as Steve turned to look at the kid.
There's no box. We dumped the entire car. It's all in. We're good.
The box! The wooden box? Peter insisted, oblivious and earnest in equal, infuriating measure.
The one in your pocket, with the little carved vines, the one you've been carrying around for...
Shut up, kid! Bucky hissed. Steve looked back at Bucky, confused, but that wasn't going to last long.
Isn't that... No?
Bucky stood up and started shoveling the soggy pile of car debris into one of the trash bags with the ice scraper. Steve didn't get it, not yet, but he clearly knew something was up. He latched onto it like a fucking dog with a bone, like he always goddamn did.
Why did you bring those?
Steve asked instead of just dropping it.
Strange didn't say anything about your parents' stuff.
Shut up, Steve, Bucky warned, but it was too late. Bucky saw the moment Steve realized. His eyes got big, his mouth dropped a little, and then he swallowed. Yeah. Bucky had brought his parents' rings on a magical trip of togetherness to dump in a fucking pink pond of unity. It sure didn't take the serum to figure out what he'd been thinking about doing with them.
Oh,
was all Steve said.
Yeah,
Bucky said, furious, pitching the ice scraper into the bag and yanking a knot tight in the top.
Oh. Why are we all going, oh? What's so special about the box?
Peter interrupted instead of just fucking off, plaintive and innocent and about to be murdered. Steve took a deep breath, turned to Peter and said,
Go wait in the car.
Wait in the car?
Peter's voice hit just the right note to tip Bucky into pure homicidal rage.
But...
Get in the car, Parker!
Bucky bellowed, using Steve's massive diaphragm to its full potential, and Peter shut his trap and booked it before Bucky could twist his head right off his neck. Bucky watched him go instead of looking at Steve. There was a long silence, while Bucky tried not to look too much like a wet cat that had fallen into the bathtub of furious proposal regret.
I'm gonna say yes,
Steve said softly from behind him when he didn't turn around. And that was just like him. It was so fucking like him. God fucking damn, Steve motherfucking Rogers.
Shut up, Steve, Jesus!
Bucky chucked the trash bag at him and took off in the opposite direction. This was fucking awful.
I can't believe you. Are you serious? Are you fucking serious? You're gonna make that the fucking...
Hey, Steve protested, jogging after him. He took Bucky's arm, pulling him to a stop, trying to hold him.
Buck, hey. You gonna make that?
Bucky said, his voice breaking as he cut himself off. He snarled and shoved Steve away. But Steve had all of Bucky's strength, plus the weight of the goddamn metal. And even though he let go, he just stood there, that fucking face on the whole time. The one that said he was being loving and patient, and Bucky was the crazy one.
You're gonna make Peter goddamn Parker and some jackass selling magic on the internet into my fucking marriage proposal, Rogers? You're gonna say yes and I didn't even get to ask?
Buck, Steve said, soft.
It's a good idea. Fuck off! No, it's not!
Bucky threw his arms wide.
It's a stupid fucking idea, Steve! Are you kidding me? It's not even going to work!
He yanked the box out of his jacket pocket and threw it at Steve, who caught it and looked more winded by it than he had when Bucky had sucker-punched him in the parking lot.
"These rings," Bucky said, sneering, livid. "My parents' rings aren't going to be a symbol of unity, Steve. They're going to be a symbol of some dipshit kid not keeping his mouth shut and us not wanting to be cursed anymore."
"Those rings are whatever we make them," Steve said, like a big fucking asshole.
"No," Bucky shouted. "Fuck you. I'm not proposing. I'm not proposing like this."
Peter sat in the front seat of the stupid darn car because so there. He looked around. Not much left. The only thing they hadn't tried chucking in the pond was... Peter frowned. He leaned forward, took the plastic cup out of the dash, and opened the lid. Sarah peered up at him.
"Oh.
Oh!" Peter knocked the door back off its hinges, scrambling out, trying very hard not to squish Sarah Froggy Cunningham in his hands, and hightailed it back to the pond. He got turned around a little, but soon the rising sense of danger to the west and the dulcet tones of fighting super soldiers steered him back on track.
"Is this what we make of it?"
Barnes was bellowing now, shaking a dirty rock in Captain Rogers's face and turning to pitch it into the water. The splash sent up a few gold sparks, but nothing big.
"What about this moss? Let's chuck the moss in. I'm making it a symbol of how fucking wrong you always are."
"Bucky," Captain Rogers said. The way he said it seemed like maybe he'd said it before a few times already.
"You know what I meant." "What about this stick?"
Barnes yelled and flung it after the rest.
"It's the fucking stick of togetherness. It's what we make of it, Steve."
Peter edged forward while they kept fighting. On the one hand, this trip could not end soon enough. Peter wanted out of these woods, out of that damn car, and to be back in Queens so badly he could taste it. If he saved Captain America, Mr. Stark might actually buy him a plane ticket back, if Peter asked. Saving Captain America was kind of a big deal. On the other hand, if he called any attention to himself, Sergeant Barnes might announce he was the Spider of Regret and drown him.
"Bucky, look, damn it, stop, give me that,"
Captain Rogers said, and tried to wrestle another rock away from Barnes using his own metal arm. Barnes looked genuinely offended by it.
"Bucky, you're acting like a little kid, you know I..."
One of the centipede aliens dropped out of the sky again. There was a pause while everyone looked at everyone else, and then Bucky Barnes made a noise like a hungover grizzly and leapt onto its chest, smashing it over and over between the eye stalks with the rock of enduring commitment. The alien screamed something, probably, "Jesus Christ, get it off my face," and careened backwards right as Doctor Strange finally stepped out of yet another portal in the air with a swirl of portentous textiles. The alien knocked him right back through the shimmering gate, which closed immediately, slicing through the alien and leaving Barnes and half a magenta centipede squirming in the moss amidst some scraps of expensive-looking and probably very recently enchanted brocade. Steve covered his face with his hands.
"Well, shit,"
Barnes said into the silence.
"Huh. What are the chances of Strange not making us wait another few hours out of wounded pride and spite?"
"Better get comfortable,"
Steve said into his hands, looking like he had a really, really bad headache.
"Maybe take a nap? You can use the moss of how wrong I always am."
Peter took a deep breath, quick-stepped up to the edge of the water, and dumped the amphibious manifestation of Rogers and Barnes's longest, most stereotypical married couple argument into the pond. Bucky felt it first in his stomach. He'd been all geared up to get Steve in a solid headlock and then grind his face into the fucking wrong moss, even though it was really Bucky's face, and that was probably symbolic of fucking something, when that sickening inside-out feeling from before hooked deep into his insides and pulled. Steve grabbed at his own gut and fell forward onto Bucky, throwing off exploding sparks like one of the now probably illegal firecrackers Bucky used to set off on the roof, then got an incredulous, joyful look, shoved it alongside the sick one turning his face green. Bucky kissed him, and when he opened his eyes again, he was looking at Steve. Steve's stupid chisel cheekbones and dumb blue eyes, and he couldn't help diving back in
and sucking face some more. It was goddamn amazing, for the first time in a week, not feeling like he was kissing through a mirror.
Bucky, Steve gasped when he got a chance. He was as breathless as Bucky was, incandescent, grinning from ear to ear.
Oh my God, Bucky, say something. I want to hear you. I love you so much.
Bucky cupped Steve's perfect jaw in both hands and kissed his brow.
I was right, Bucky said, slowly and clearly. About the rings.
And then, as Steve's mouth opened in shocked indignation, Bucky twisted Steve to the forest floor and ground his face into the moss of wrong.
I love you anyway, though, baby,
Bucky cooed, and Steve somersaulted over backwards, got a good grip on Bucky's face while Bucky scrabbled at his fingers, and started rubbing leaf mulch into Bucky's hair.
Chapter 7.
Mr. Stark.
Where are you? What are you doing?
Back alone in the Toyota, Peter jumped and grabbed his phone. It was still mostly intact, unlike his eyes, after seeing two grown adults making out in the dirt. Maybe he should talk to Mr. Stark about a bulletproof casing for his brain, too.
Mr. Stark.
Don't answer that. I know where you are. Why on earth are you in the back end of Canada?
Mr. Stark.
Don't answer that either. I don't care. Answer this. Why is Strange sending me passive-aggressive snippy bullshit about aliens and woodland streams?
Peter thought about that for a moment. It's a woodla, he typed back carefully. When he pressed the A, the crack across the front of his phone widened. Oops, shit. In spring, not Strem, he finished. Shit, A was going to be really hard to avoid.
Mr. Stark.
It's not too late for me to reprogram your suit to use baby talk that's audible to everyone around you.
Mr. Stark.
Anyway, whatever. I also don't care about that. Apparently invasion is not imminent. The gist of the whole tantrum is Strange is chickening out of whatever you're doing, but in a really angry and bitchy way.
Mr. Stark.
He's also really upset about his new clothes or whatever, I guess.
Oh, no, Peter texted, one hand up and covering his mouth in horror.
Oh, no, that's bid. That's really bid. We couldn't close the alien portal. We already put everything into the spring. We broke all the other spells, but the portal is still open.
Mr. Stark.
I'm also not sure how I became Steve's answering service.
Mr. Stark.
But I don't like it.
Tell Dr. Strange we couldn't break the last spell. Tell him everything is in the spring already except the weird box, and Sergeant Burns will literally murder anyone who touches it.
Peter begged, typing frantically.
Mr. Stark.
Oh, poor fucking Barnes.
Mr. Stark.
You know what? If it's not important enough for Strange to get over whatever this pissy shit fit of his is...
Mr. Stark.
Then it's not important enough for me to play secretary to Steve fucking Rogers.
Mr. Stark.
Peace.
No,
Peter said, and then tried calling. But it was no good. Mr. Stark wasn't answering.
Oh, no.
Peter cranked the seat back. It stuck a little. Apparently Peter had kicked it at some point, and stared at the ceiling. Come on, he willed himself, glaring at the dented and ripped-up roof. Come on. This is how it goes. 0 hour. Everything is awful. You can do this. You can stare at something and come up with a sudden flare of brilliance. He waited. He hadn't realized he'd gotten that much webbing on the ceiling, actually. When did he web the ceiling? He waited some more. To be fair, the whole brainwave thing had already happened at least twice on this trip. He might be all out of them. Come on. Peter squinted hard, looking around the car. Maybe seat stuffing? Could that be a symbol of Rogers's and Barnes's overstuffed hearts? Come on. Everything was terrible. Everything was amazing. Steve had his arms full of Bucky. Bucky, who was back in the right body, the right height and the right heft and the right everything. Sure, they were lying in a pile of leaves, and sure, there was a glowing alien portal a few yards away that spat out segmented hostiles every so often, and yeah, both of them had about half the forest floor ground into their hair, but it was perfect.
Everything was perfect. Steve was so full of happiness, he was surprised he wasn't actually physically glowing anymore. Vaguely, off in the distance, there were a series of crashes. Steve paused. Bucky noticed it too, frowning and squinting in the direction of the growing noise. It was coming to the right of the alien portal, so it probably wasn't related, but who knew? Weirder things had happened today. It was getting closer either way, solid crunching noises, followed by the shrieking sound of retching metal. Steve stood, reaching for the shield. Bucky hefted one of the alien guns and braced for impact. Whatever it was big and damn uncoordinated. Steve could hear the sound of wood splintering as it got closer, could see the jolt and shudder of the trees as whatever it was hit something further on. And then... Steve had a really bad thought. Oh, shit. The Toyota burst from the scrub and trees. The front bumper had been torn completely off, the headlights smashed, the hood crumpled like an old paperback, and the sides were streaked with dents and scraped paint. It wobbled slightly when it hit the clearing, falling clumsily to one side on a blown tire and a broken axle, and Peter Parker actually waved at them from behind the steering wheel before sending it careening into the enchanted spring and diving for safety. Steve couldn't bear to look at Bucky. The car hit the water like chemistry-class sodium, sending off fireworks and brilliant white and green sparks before bursting into an explosion of flames that probably lit up the countryside all the way to Vancouver. There was a full-size symphony orchestra playing, complete with cannons, gongs, and kettle drums, huge rising crescendos matched with each new eruption of showering sparkles. The portal in the air let loose a brilliant shimmer, like the clouds parting on the birth of Thor, and closed up with a loud bang. After maybe another 2 minutes of a full remastered End of the Death Star soundtrack and pyrotechnics, the fireball dwindled enough to see the shape of the car through the flames. What was left of it, anyway? After another long moment, Steve closed his mouth.
"I'm okay,"
Peter called from beyond the wreckage. Steve could see a skinny arm ringed with charred remnants of hoodie sticking out of the bushes on the other side of the newly created car jacuzzi.
"I jumped out when I hit the water. I'm okay."
Beside Steve, Bucky was stock still and speechless, sparkly pink rifle hanging forgotten from his limp grasp, metal fingers held out disbelievingly at the flaming carcass of the Toyota. He was making little choking noises, but soon enough he swallowed, his eyes narrowed, and it was the Winter Soldier who swiveled towards Peter Parker. Steve grabbed the rifle and slung a restraining arm around Bucky, in the interest of Peter remaining okay.
"He just atomized my car,"
Bucky said, sounding cool and detached, like he was talking about the weather. He took a single step forward.
"He ripped off 3 doors, destroyed the back seat, mangled the trunk, and then firebombed it with a magic spring. No jury of my peers would convict me."
Steve felt his boots slide in the forest loam and braced himself against Bucky's weight.
"They don't fill juries with super soldiers who transfer all their 90-year-old dad issues to their cars nowadays, Buck,"
he tried as Bucky inched them forwards.
"They might take homicide a little more seriously than vandalism." "Then I guess I'll hang,"
Bucky swore, and Steve wrapped him in both arms and dragged him bodily backwards.
"Hey, it worked,"
Peter said, blithely unaware of the chill wind of Soviet death aimed his way. He staggered to his feet and regarded the burning remains with his hands on his hips, listing a bit to the side, but clearly proud of his vehicular pyromania.
"I just figured it was the last thing we hadn't tossed in the spring, but that portal is totally gone. We didn't even need Doctor Strange."
"You didn't even know if—"
Bucky managed around Steve's left bicep, before Steve tightened his grip around Bucky's head and heaved.
"It was destroyed anyway,"
Steve said desperately, thankful Bucky was too focused on murder to be very smart about throwing him off.
"Buck, we needed a new one already." "It closed the portal because it was a symbol of our relationship, Steven!"
Bucky roared as soon as he pulled his face free of Steve's grip and heaved himself forward. Steve's heels sank into the dirt.
"You gonna just pick up one of those at the dealership too? Huh? You think they fucking sell those, Steve?"
Steve writhed a hand into Bucky's pocket, pulled out the little wooden box, and rattled it meaningfully in his face. Bucky became somehow even more pissed off.
Are you fucking proposing to me with my own goddamn rings?
He shrieked, a full octave above normal. Peter, wreathed in smoldering Toyota, and still completely oblivious, was nodding his head and smiling proudly at a job well done.
Well,
he said, turning, hands still triumphantly on his hips, like the last kid in the spelling bee.
I think that was the last thing. I think we've got it. Let's head home.
Steve and Bucky both stared, paralyzed by the sheer absurdity of it all for a moment, before Bucky lunged forward with his teeth bared and his hands outstretched like claws.
In what?
He bellowed as Steve jumped on his back and tackled him to the ground. Bucky flailed, almost incandescent with violent death, dragging himself forward through the rotting leaves under Steve's full weight. Peter, whose danger-sensing superpowers really should have clocked the livid assassin crawling through the leaves before that point, finally clued in and stumbled back, eyes wide.
In fucking what, Parker? Do you know what our options are now? Do you? We are stranded in the Canadian wilderness, Parker. I'm stranded with you in the fucking Canadian wilderness!
Steve had to carry Bucky over his shoulder, thrashing and swearing, for about 7 or 8 miles before they hit a portion of the countryside with cell reception. Then it was either sit on him, while Peter tried desperately to summon a lift without touching his A key, or end up in the kind of situation where Captain America buried the body of a foreign-born teenager in the fucking Canadian wilderness to cover up adolescent arachnicide, and fled the country again.
I spy with my little eye something starting with a T, Aunt May said.
Trees, Peter said with deep dejection, face mashed up against the back window. Thank you again for giving us a ride, ma'am, Captain Rogers said earnestly. He'd been sitting at what Peter could only call extremely cramped attention on the other side of the rear seat for the last hour, while Sergeant Enormous Asshole got the prime spot in the front. Wasn't it just always the way?
Especially after Peter lost his paperwork in the car fire. Even if we were willing to risk unbreaking the spell by flying back, we couldn't have made it across the border legally.
Peter pressed his forehead harder against the glass and tried to become one with the tempered surface. It didn't work.
I was already here,
Aunt May said, waving her hand benevolently toward them, as if she had just been dropping by, instead of madly tearing across the continent in a furious, protective rage, after realizing Peter could really have been in trouble at that rest stop, and unable to say so out loud. There had been a shotgun in the trunk when Peter put his backpack in.
It was no problem. It was the least I could do after assuming the worst of you.
Ma'am, Sergeant Barnes said, sweet and serious. Peter gagged.
You are a saint among women, and you were absolutely right to come out when your kid called you for rescue. You did the right thing. You should always trust him over a couple of meatballs like us.
Aunt May glanced at him, clearly charmed, and Peter wondered if he could throw himself from the vehicle before Captain Rogers caught him and reeled him back in. Honestly, thinking back, the look of dumbstruck adoration on Sergeant Barnes's face when he had looked up from under Steve Rogers's bulk and saw Aunt May skidding her Mazda through the dirt in the middle of bumfuck British Columbia before leaping out brandishing a tire iron was going to haunt Peter's dreams for the rest of his life.
Well, Aunt May shrugged, it's also the least I could do after Peter torched your car.
Peter didn't know how they'd done it. Sergeant Barnes hadn't even had to lie about anything. In fact, they'd apparently been telling her the truth for the entire trip. They really had been updating her about every stop and Google sharing their location with her the entire way, which was how she'd pulled up and threatened two gaping super soldiers with bodily disfigurement while they were waiting for their rideshare in the woods.
That's nothing. We brought your kid to a transdimensional fight and didn't say a word. We should have known the aliens would show up,
Sergeant Barnes said, hanging his head and looking up at Aunt May, shamefaced and remorseful.
We knew they were involved. We never should have put him in harm's way. We never would have done it intentionally.
That sure was a surprise to Peter, since A, Barnes hadn't seemed to mind a whole lot when it was happening, and B, the last time he'd hung out with Captain Rogers, the man had dropped a moving hallway on him, and then sassed him about it.
You kept him safe and uninjured, Aunt May said sternly, which was more than Stark did the last time he was out. You know Peter came home with a bruise that covered half his face? I can't believe that man. I'm so glad he was with you two this time.
Peter gaped a little at the unfairness of that one, and even Captain Rogers had the decency to look a little awkward. But Sergeant Barnes just flashed his best aw shucks smile and went right back to flirting. Aunt May was blushing. Peter wanted to die. "Aren't you going to do something?" Peter hissed, elbowing Captain Rogers in the ribs. Rogers looked at him, clearly amused, and Peter bristled. "Aren't you guys engaged now? Are you seriously letting him hit on my aunt the whole way back to New York?"
"Peter," Rogers said cheerfully, and way too loud. Aunt May could definitely hear him. "Bucky has been flirting with pretty competent women our entire lives. I've decided I need to get used to it. It's not going to stop just because we're engaged."
"We're not engaged," Barnes complained over his shoulder. "You can't propose to me with my own rings in the middle of an intergalactic fight, Rogers. Come on. May here would never be so crass. I should leave you both here and run off with her. I bet she'd even get me flowers."
"I would absolutely get you flowers," Aunt May promised, smiling at him like he wasn't the worst human being in the world. And Peter almost made it out of the window before Captain America flattened him to the car seat.
As much as Bucky was happy to spend an entire road trip chatting up Peter's aunt, he also seemed pretty pleased to get home. If shouting, "Oh, thank God," slamming the door behind him, sliding four bolts home and arming every defense they had was any indication. Steve graciously allowed Bucky to drag him into the bedroom, pile on the covers, and disappear for a few days. Such a burden, so hard to endure. But after a week or so he settled down, and Steve could wear clothes and go outdoors again, without Bucky turning into a mute, glaring monument to sexual sullenness swaddled in six duvets. They had also been collectively shirty with enough people that while there were a few minor supervillain crises after they got back, everyone involved called someone else, which was really nice. Bucky especially was basking in it. He'd even bought a new Toyota, electric this time, which was apparently the most reliable according to some magazine or something, and with the added bonus of electric motor meaning nobody could hear you while you snuck up on them. It was all very peaceful. Steve was vibrating out of his skin. As it turned out, planning and executing a real, earnest proposal absolutely was different than taking your partner's rings and shaking them at him meaningfully, and Bucky could never know he'd been right. "Oh," Steve finally said, late Friday night. Bucky glanced up from his book, a vaguely curious look on his face. Steve was sweating. Shit. Well, he couldn't control that, but you'd think he could control the way he kept fidgeting with his hands. He willed them still. "Hey," he croaked, trying for casual and hitting, imitating a human but without a working voice box instead. He cleared his throat. "Hey," he said again. "You want to go, out?" Bucky narrowed his eyes. "To eat," Steve said. "You want to go out to eat with me? At a nice place." "At a nice place," Bucky echoed, suspicious. "You like nice places," Steve said. He didn't have anything to do with his hands now that they were still. He couldn't put them in his pockets. He only put his hands in his pockets when he had something to hide. Bucky was going to know. "I do like nice places," Bucky agreed, looking at Steve's hands, which had somehow ended up in his pockets. "Just, I mean, you'll have to put on pants," Steve said desperately. "You could go put on pants soon?" Bucky closed his book and looked at him. "Soon," he said. "Yeah, just, you know, whatever, but soon," Steve told him, thinking about the reservation time. Should he have just reserved the whole night? Could you even do that? He was Captain America. He could probably do that. He should have done that. "Okay," Bucky agreed, putting down the book and standing. "Sure. Pants." A whole God-loving hour later, Steve was losing his mind. "Are you still doing your hair?" he demanded, opening the bathroom door. "It looks exactly like it did half an hour ago. We're going to be late." Bucky stuck his tongue out between his teeth and did something very precise with what looked like a pair of flattened spaghetti tongs. "Late for this spur-of-the-moment dinner, huh?" Steve was probably going to explode. He said, "Yes." "Uh-huh," Bucky said. "Well, it's gonna have to wait a little longer. I know I didn't tell you about it yet,
but I...
He trailed off, staring at Steve's jacket pocket.
Oh, no.
Steve stared back at him, eyes probably doing that wide and panicky thing, and tried to grip the ring box in his pocket a little less tightly.
What? Oh, no, Bucky said, still staring. Oh, shit. You're gonna propose.
This was terrible.
I don't, Steve said desperately. I could not? No, Bucky said, and dropped the electrified tongs into the sink. No, no, do it, now, quick.
Steve said. What?
Quick,
Bucky hissed. He grabbed Steve by the collar, pulled him in close, and shot his own panicked look out the window.
Hurry!
The doorbell rang. Bucky looked defeated.
Fuck, he moaned. Oh, shit, I should have told you.
What? Steve asked again.
Maybe they're not home?
Steve heard through the door. There was a shuffling noise, like someone was hopping from foot to foot.
Maybe they forgot. Oh, well, I'm old enough to stay home, Aunt May. It's only for the weekend.
Yeah, I don't think so, Peter, May replied, and Steve felt his stomach sink to about shin level. Bucky had his face in his hands and was making a quiet sound of despair.
I can't even imagine the superheroing bullshit you could get mixed up in. I'm leaving you with responsible adults, and that's final.
Responsible? Peter protested.
They're on probation for being international terrorists.
You didn't, Steve said, and Bucky lifted his head to make the I definitely did and I'm regretting it now face.
Buck, I was going to propose.
Well, I didn't know you were going to propose, Bucky complained, gesturing angrily, and opened the door. Both Parkers turned to look at them, and while Peter looked like he was greeting his own execution, May gave Bucky her sunniest smile.
Thank you so much for looking after him at such late notice, she said, bustling in. She dropped a couple of bags on the couch and dusted off her hands.
I can't tell you what a relief it is to know he's somewhere safe. I've been terrified to turn my back for a minute since Peter went back to his internship with that man.
It's no problem, ma'am, Steve said automatically, dying inside. He opened his mouth to say something else, couldn't come up with anything, and risked a glance at Peter.
Peter had apparently heard them through the door. He was looking at the box that had somehow made it out of Steve's jacket and into his hand. Steve jerked it behind his back.
Oh, no, Peter whispered.
We're running kind of late, May said apologetically. I really just got to head right back out. Thank you again. I'm sure you'll have a great time. And Peter, she added, turning a glare on him, will in no way damage anything in your home.
Okay, to be fair, the car was never in their home, though, Peter argued. And if I had driven it inside their home, you'd probably be angry at me for that.
May looked at him stonily, and Peter opened his mouth, closed it, and said,
I won't break any more of their stuff, Aunt May.
After one more long look, May nodded decisively and left. They all stood around in a loose circle for a while.
Well, Steve said at length, every word dragged out of him and clawing at his insides the whole way up. I guess Peter is coming out to dinner with us.
Oh, no, Peter said.
So,
Bucky said, to the bedroom ceiling. Steve glanced over from his side of the bed, every part of him a careful 6 inches away from every part of Bucky.
Yeah? It's our engagement night.
I mean, technically not. Steve hedged, shuffling uncomfortably. Bucky got it. There was a big, double, super-soldier-sized divot in the middle of the bed, and the mattress kept trying to slide them in closer together. Bucky had locked his metal arm onto the edge to keep steady, but Steve didn't have that advantage.
I haven't actually had a chance to propose yet.
Bucky glowered at the ceiling while Steve continued the struggle to maintain decorum.
It's our engagement night, Bucky repeated threateningly.
Yes, Steve agreed, immediately going belly up with a white flag like a champ.
Yes, it is. Absolutely.
Bucky closed his eyes.
It's our engagement night. You proposed at Delmonico's. You got me roses. You even hired a violinist to play sappy nostalgic love songs from the 40s.
Steve cleared his throat like he knew the right answer, but couldn't bring himself to say it. Sorta. Most of those things happened, he managed and made a face. The violinist was really confused. And Spider-Man was sitting there next to us, staring at his Bolognese al forno in silence for the entire goddamned evening. Well, Steve fidgeted with the duvet and tried to stuff it under one side to keep himself from rolling towards the love of his life. Yes, hence the not actually proposing. It's our engagement night, and Spider-Man is still here, and he can hear every move we make because he has super hearing. You invited him, Steve couldn't help pointing out. Is this a bad dream? Bucky demanded, gesturing at their surroundings. This here, this whole thing, is this a nightmare? Am I ever going to wake up? I don't feel comfortable pinching you in bed with him listening, Steve said, but look on the bright side. We took public transport, so he hasn't been anywhere near the new car. We're very close to being engaged. His aunt loves you, and he hasn't even broken anything yet.
I just pulled the towel rod out of the bathroom wall, and I'm super sorry, Peter announced from the other room, right on cue. It just came off in my hand. I didn't mean to. Please don't tell Aunt May.
I want to wake up, Bucky moaned, and tried to smother himself with a pillow. Chapter 8. It was just as Steve was finally putting away the last of the post-teenage boy laundry, unwillingly impressed at the sheer number of linens Spider-Man had managed to leave on the floor before finally going home, that he noticed something wrong. Steve froze mid-towel and glanced up. It wasn't anything Bucky was doing, exactly. In fact, right at that moment, Bucky was pulling out his award-winning schoolboy penmanship to address the wedding invitations by hand, and there wasn't a whole lot about a cursing centenarian doing his correspondence to raise any flags. There was just this whiff of smug satisfaction in the air, something about Bucky's carefully neutral posture or face that screamed self-congratulation and raised the hairs on the back of Steve's neck. Steve refused to be drawn in. Whatever it was, Bucky wanted him to notice it, so he wouldn't. Bucky finished the invitation he was working on with a flourish, gave in to the smug smile Steve had already known he'd been holding back, peeked at Steve out of the corner of his eye. Steve caved. "What did you do?" he asked, completely against his better judgment. "Nothing," Bucky sing-songed, so Steve put him in a preemptive headlock to lean over and get a good look at the invitation. Bucky flailed, and the table went flying, along with the fancy ink pens and heavy cardstock, but not before Steve got a glance at the salutation. "Are you?" Steve managed, weathering repeated elbows to the ribs and barely noticing. "Are you serious?" "Well, how?" Bucky said, muffled by Steve's armpit, reaching around to punch Steve in the kidneys. It was a bad angle. Steve could ignore it. "How am I going to run off with Sarah and leave you at the altar if I don't invite her to the wedding in the first place?" "Is she even alive by now?" Steve demanded. "How are you going to run off with her if she is? I don't think her hips would be able to sustain a light jog. You ow!" Steve jerked backwards. "You bit me!" Bucky eeled around, twisted his movement somehow, and ended up behind Steve long enough to jump on his back, twist his legs up and around Steve's arms, and pitch their combined weight forward. Steve staggered and fell face first on the bed. "That woman has ageless hips, Stevie. Don't worry." Bucky heaved their weight again and mashed Steve's face into the covers. Steve flailed behind him like a trussed cow. "I thought you said you were going to get used to it. And you can't get mad, you ingrate. She sacrificed herself for our love." "She didn't have much of a choice. Peter didn't exactly ask her opinion before he chucked her in the explosive pond," Steve said around a mouthful of the duvet. He finally got his arms under him and flipped, then starfished out and trapped Bucky underneath him. Bucky made an indignant noise and went straight for Steve's ribs. "Anyway," Steve gasped, trying to protect the most ticklish parts and failing. "That wasn't even her! It wasn't even her!" "It was her symbolically," Bucky crowed, and this time when he reached around, he went straight for Steve's dick. And then Steve went for the purple thing, which shut them both up after a while. The end.